The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
Good morning, all. This is Ryan Tubridy with you at pretty much 4 minutes past nine now. It is Tuesday morning, the 26th of November, 2019. We're here till 10. The text number is 51551. You can email ryan@rte.ie. It's a misery drizzery sort of all morning, I'd say, but that's okay too. It's November the 26th. You got the memo when you were born. That's what happens. So what have we today for you? Well, we've got lots of different things that we're going to bring to your attention today and indeed all week. It's funny, I've never been to Mount Rushmore, but yet it seems to be part of something we all know and we've all heard. I don't know if anyone listening has ever gone to see it in real life. Is it as impressive as it looks in the movies? And it's always been parodied and things have happened to it in different scenarios. But Nick Clifford was 17 years old when he went to work on Mount Rushmore. Can you imagine back in that at that time, how putting it together in the 1930s and the energy and the engineering feat of it when you think of it. And this young guy called Nick Clifford operated a winch that carried workers up and down the mountain where the faces of Washington and Jefferson, Roosevelt and Lincoln were carved. And his job was to drill holes for dynamite, make it all more interesting. And he worked there from 1938 to 1940. He earned 55 cents an hour. And he was the last living worker who helped construct Mount Rushmore. And he died. That's the story. We begin with the end this morning as we celebrate the life of Nick Clifford, the last living worker who helped construct Mount Rushmore. It reminds me of The Devil Next Door, the documentary I was telling you all about, Ivan the Terrible. And a lot of you, a lot of friends and people I work with are saying that they've watched it since. I'm glad to say no one's been disappointed, despite the length of it and the unnecessary extra episodes in it. It's still fascinating. But this, the last living worker from 1938, that brings to mind the last of the war criminals of the SS and the Nazi and Nazism, and the last of the survivors of the Holocaust. The last. We're heading to this as we get to the 20s, 30s and so on, to the last men and women standing from these absolutely awful moments in history. And yet, I see kind of as a by the by, I mentioned that Hitler's top hat and his typewriter, among other things, were put up for auction. And there's a whole discomfort about whether or not they should be put up for auction, who puts them up for auction, who buys them, what do they do with them, and why do they want them? Simple questions, but it's been ever thus. As soon as Hitler and his other half killed themselves outside the bunker and finished the story in a manner of speaking, there has been a perverse, weird interest in it all. And I've often contended that the interest in that period of history is because it's so simple in its complexity. By that I mean, there was goodies and baddies. The Nazis went and killed Jewish people as well as the Allies and so on. And it was just so black and white in many ways. And then, of course, you dissect it and you realise there's more to it. But in some ways it's not. It's Nazis bad, others good. And that's why it's such an easy story to follow, if you like. But the memorabilia thing, as Robert Harris wrote so brilliantly in his book Selling Hitler, is a whole sub-economy, and it's dark as hell. And this guy decided, he's a Lebanese millionaire, lives in Switzerland, and he went essentially to the auction. His name is Abdallah Shatila, and he bought it all, everything. He said, I'll take the typewriter, I'll take the cigar box, I'll take the top hat, and he bid and bought everything to the tune of 545,000 euro. And you might be asking yourself, what does Abdullah Chatilla want with all that sort of thing? Who is this Lebanese millionaire living in Switzerland, like something out of an Austin Powers film, stroking a cat possibly in a big chair? What does he want with all these things? And this is a good news story in many ways amongst the darkness. He said, and I'm quoting Abdullah Chatilla now when I say, he said, I wanted to buy these objects so that they would not be used for neo-Nazi propaganda purposes. And my approach is totally apolitical and neutral. He originally planned to buy them so he could destroy them. kill them off altogether. But he's decided, and I think it's probably the right thing to do, he's decided to donate them to an Israeli fundraising organization. Right? You might have strong opinions on Israel too, because that's another complication in the story and what happened there. But that's not for us this morning. I'm simply telling a story about Hitler's top hat and cigar box and typewriter, and how a Lebanese millionaire decided that he wanted to take them out of the hands of people who would use them and put them on an altar to perverse politics. And instead he said, I'll take them away and I'll give them to somebody who might actually be able to show children. And said that on that typewriter, the most awful things were typed by fingers that would go on and touch the most terrible moments in history. Kind of clever. I'm glad he did it and he could afford to do it. And the Jewish groups, by the way, they have condemned the sale of these types of things. They've accused the auction house behind it of trading in Nazi souvenirs and enabling people to glorify the Nazis. And the auction house insisted vets buyers carefully and says, we don't sell to neo-Nazis, and saying that most of its customers are serious collectors. I am curious to know what a serious collector does with it, though. Is it a centrepiece at home? Is it a curio after a few drinks? What is it? Is there a history to it that is sincere, or is it creepy? I'm not sure. It just crossed my mind when I see these stories. Movie wise, just a few things. One is that Little Women is one of those books and movies and stories that has stayed with us for years. They've lasted the pace. I'm glad to see even my own love this, and I just think it's a great story. And I kind of got into it courtesy of my youngest, who said, I love this film. I said, well, let's have a look at it. And it's lovely, but they've re-released it now with Greta Gerwig. And if you don't know Greta Gerwig, she's a writer, director, and she's made some gorgeous, interesting, of-their-time films. And she's now directing and writing Little Women, which stars, of course, Saoirse Ronan as Jo. Emma Watson is in there too, and she wouldn't be everyone's cup of tea, but she'd be other people's cup of tea, so that's fine. Florence Pugh, who I've loved from the moment I saw her in the Lady Macbeth, and then in that Mad Midsummer, and in other TV things as well. She's just a wonderful actress, and she's getting bigger and bigger. Eliza Scanlon playing her sisters, Meg, Amy and Beth. I've never heard of Eliza Scanlon, but nevertheless, they're all in there. Laura Dern is there as the mother, apparently she's amazing in it, and Timothée Chalamet, who's in everything, is Lawrence. And the review today in the Daily Mail from Brian Viner is a 5-star review. And they're saying it's coming out apparently on Stephen's Day, but they're saying it is absolutely terrific. Little Women is, by definition, he writes, a feminine story with men only in supporting roles. But Timothée Chalamet is exactly right, as Lawrence. If the film does have a standout star, he writes, it's Saoirse Ronan, who glittered 2 years ago in Lady Bird. She's just wonderful as fiercely independent and impulsive Jo, an aspiring novelist whose ambitions and accomplishments as a writer very aptly bookend the film. Without ever feeling forced or anachronistic, there's something unmistakably modern about her character. She's an 1860s heroine, exactly in tune with Me Too sensibilities. He writes, if this makes the film sound like a feminist tract, don't be alarmed. It's not. What it is a joy from start to finish. A ravishingly shot, exquisitely acted, emotional roller coaster that at times, I don't mind admitting, didn't just activate my tear ducts, but had me gurning wildly to stop myself from blubbing audibly. Alongside me, my wife was going through similar contortions. Do not say you haven't been warned. Well, that is a glowing, glowing review of Little Women, which we won't be able to see till after Christmas, but a nice time of the year for it to come out, obviously. It's a little Christmas theme in there. And it is one that I hope to get to see in due course. And if I get to see a preview of it, I'll tell you all about it. Also doing very well at the box office, Frozen 2. Frozen 2 raked in $350 million in its opening weekend worldwide, beating forecasts and the box office debut of the original film. Imagine, that's such is the demand for it. It says Disney says the sequel has set a new record for the biggest opening weekend for an animation, and that is spectacular. And I'm thinking, whatever about Frozen, I'm thinking about E.T. today. Because in E.T., do you remember E.T., the film? Yeah. When there's this scene where they're dissecting frogs. And at home, the film is The Quiet Man with Maureen O'Hara, isn't it? And John Wayne. And Elliot gets all kind of drunky, weirdy. And he does that scene with the little girl and he flings her off and brings her back in again. I think that all happens, or did it? Anyway, that's where my mind went when I read this story. That there's a school in America that has said no to dissecting frogs, but they still want to dissect frogs. So what do? Well, they've come up with an answer. They have found synthetic frogs for educational dissections. Now, we're told 3 million frogs are killed in classrooms around the world, or maybe just America even, every year. And the lives of real frogs are being spared at a cost of $150 per synthetic frog. And the fake frogs are made of water, fibres and salts, and they can be reused. I mean, that sounds very practical, doesn't it? Rather than hunting around ponds and trying to kill all the frogs. And I know that Kermit himself will breathe a great sigh of relief to know that his future and future generations of his will be safe knowing this is going to happen. Okay, honourable mention in the emails today goes to Tina. I was singing and dancing yesterday for a long, long, long time. The costume that they've put me in this year is so cumbersome that when they took it off after about an hour and a half of traipsing around the place, I looked like I'd been dunked in water. It was so revolting. And we had to have a rethink of some of the things we're going to have to do with it because it's just pretty, pretty hectic. But it looks the bomb. It looks great. As soon as you see it, you go, what the hell have they done to him? So you're going to have a bit of him. There's more to come today. I have lots more training and dancing and singing to try and get it right. But I met all the kids yesterday from the opening number. And honestly, it's like having another family. It's beautiful. So they were great. So we're in good stead. It's only Tuesday, but we're good. I'm gone for the Alpine special jumper this morning. You can go on Instagram to check that. Instatubberty will show you a kind of running commentary of how the toy show preparations are going this week. And brings me neatly to Tina, who says, last year, I took my two amazing girls to Penny's, the shop, and my eldest daughter, Sarah, was 12. She was growing like crazy at the time. She begged me to buy a pair of the Late Late Toy Show pajamas for all the three of us. However, Kaylee, who was 10 at the time, had already very cute red and fluffy Minnie Mouse PJs and other somewhat Christmassy ones. So I decided it was unnecessary and just bought a pair for myself and a pair for Sarah. The week passed and I had to ignore all of Kaylee's pleas, her sweet nothings and unpleasant looks for the week, and I was quite pleased at myself for not having caved in. Finally, toy show night. We were all set, PJs on, fire blazing, Christmas crackers ready to snap. Oh, I love it. Lemon season's greetings, if you don't mind, old school. And hot chocolate steaming. Could it just get any better, writes Tina. Well then, with a minute to spare, countdown on, Kaylee disappears upstairs. I paused the TV and asked what she was doing, considering we had spent weeks, if not months, looking forward to this very moment. A couple of minutes later, down she comes with a second to spare, wearing her very own homemade Late Late Toy Show PJs and with the smuggest expression known to man. She clearly wasn't going to be the odd one out. And sure enough, the photograph is of a blank pajama top, white, with pen written Late Late Toy Show and pen drawn owl. Pretty rudimentary stuff. But by hook or by crook, she was getting those pajamas and they are tremendous. And I will put those up on Instagram too because that is too funny. Well done to her. Tina, looking forward to Friday night. Very excited household. Good, good, good. And to you and Sarah and Kaylee, happy Christmas. Film recommendation, if you're going to the movies, says the text, go and see Marriage Story. Just go, says Gene and Courtney. It looks really depressing, so I'm not going to go and see it. But thank you for the recommendation. It's getting 5 stars everywhere, but so did A Star Is Born, and it nearly lost the will to live after that. Historical artifact, says George. If I was still teaching history, I retired after 36 years in 2009, I would love to have bought Hitler's items to use in class. Yeah, and they should get carried around and brought around, so that's good. Went to see The Knives Are Out. How? Last night in Coolock. Good film. No Poirot, though. Worth a look on a wet afternoon. Oh, Sean, I'm dying to see The Knives Are Out. I was reading a big article about it last week. It's essentially an updated take on Agatha Christie thing because all that's all back in. And I'm really keen to see that. Will that be open this weekend? Okay, that's definitely this Saturday, Sunday sort of day. Post-toy show. Come down. Lads, are we going to go and see did anyone go and see The Irishman? 3.5 hours. 3.5 hours. I love Martin Scorsese. I love Al Pacino. I love Joe Pesci. I love Robert De Niro. I love Goodfellas. It's one of my top three. But 3.5 hours. I've 3 times in the last 10 days I've said, I'm going to go and see it today. And then I went, who has 3.5 hours in the day? It's a long. I'm still going to go and see it, but I'm trying to get to see it before it goes on Netflix because I want to see it on a small screen. Mount Rushmore, says Angeline, is hugely impressive. I've gone twice while on road trips in the US Midwest. Tourists can take helicopter trips around it and the still unfinished Crazy Horse Monument. In fact, put the whole Badlands and Black Hills up to South Dakota on your bucket list. Bon voyage. Thank you for that. Meanwhile, let's take some music from the Cannibals. It's the Fine Young Cannibals and good thing. Now, Roland Gift was, I've often mentioned this, but Roland Gift was the lead singer of the Fine Young Cannibals, dabbled in acting for a little while and starred in a film called Scandal, in which he played, his name just escapes me, but he plays a character who was a tricky old character in the end, Johnny Edgecombe, that's it, and who was a kind of a bit part in the Profumo affair, which I've always been utterly absorbed by and intrigued by. It's where we spoke to Christine Keeler's son here on the programme shortly after she died. And I see that the BBC are doing a drama over Christmas, which I will be waiting for at the front door in the first the beginning of the queue. I've called The Trial of Christine Keeler, written, directed and produced by a female team. It describes the adaptation for the Me Too era. To be interesting, they're going to look at it through the gaze of a female gaze. So John Profumo, whose wife was Valerie Hobson, whose name you'll see sometimes if you watch an old black and white film. She was a fine actress in her day. It'll give Keeler, Mindy Rice-Davis and Hobson their own voice decades after the affair caused a sensation and contributed to the fall of Harold Macmillan's government in 1963. And an actress I always like to see is Amelia Fox. She's playing Valerie Hobson in it, and the wife of John Profumo, and Christine Keeler is played by Sophie Cookson, who I don't know, and Stephen Ward is played by James Norton, who's a great actor. So that looks absolutely tremendous, and I will be watching that. It looks really classy, even just from one shot from it. They used to go and play by the pool, and it became a little unsavoury. And if you don't know the story, it's one worth catching up on, and you will be able to do so when you look at that. So that's good news. Now, worth just saying that our friends at On Post want to have a little competition with us. Not a little one, a big one. We do it every year and it's just tremendous. And we love it. And what we like is this idea of sending a postcard or a letter or a parcel. And we do like those handwritten postcards and letters. And that's what we want you to do over the next couple of weeks if you get your heads together. We have lots and lots of prizes with On Post to give away. And all we ask you to do is send, if you could write a letter that you never sent, who would you send it to and what would you say? It's a really, really interesting exercise to write down something like this. It doesn't have to be 5 pages. It can be 2 paragraphs. But strangely, the power of putting a pen to paper, more so even than fingers to keyboard, is quite liberating. Give it a go and see. But if you could write this letter, do. And we want you to write it if you can and post it to us if you want to do a handwritten to the Ryan Tuberty Show, Donnybrook Dublin 4. You can email, of course, to ryan@rte.ie if it's easier for you, if you're not able to write it or what have you. And then we're going to read them out throughout December. And as I say, you could win yourself a nice prize, could be a sum of money, something like that to help you through Christmas. So I think that would be of interest to a lot of you listening this morning. My claim to fame, says the text, is my scooter was in that Fine Young Cannibals video. Yes, it was. 63 Lambretta. LI150. Cut down with extended forks. Oh, I like your style. I'm curious that your last 3 digits of your mobile phone number is 666, though. But that's between you and the person you bought the bike off. What class of deal did you strike with the seller of that bike? There's a word that comes to mind, but that's, as I say, between you and that curious scar on your head. It can only be seen if you lift the... Okay, you got the point.